Labor and Commerce Committee. Time is 1:25, March 21st, 1985. Members present, Representative Marr, Representative Propanen, Representative Hanlon, Representative Pierce, Representative Collins, and Representative Boucher. We have several bills before us today. I'd like to first announce that we will not be taking testimony today on House Bill 90 or House Bill 130, but I would like the members to distribute whatever comments or suggestions they have, at least by the end of the day, to the other members so that we can discuss them tomorrow at our meeting at 1:15.
Yes.
Has everyone who wishes to testify signed up today?
Thank you.
I'd just like to ask the committee members to consider the different amendments or language that's being proposed, and so that we can discuss them tomorrow. And if you have more language that you want to introduce tomorrow, I guess that we can't disallow that, but to try to make it available in the morning or as soon as possible so the other members would have adequate time to consider it. With that, I'd like to go to statewide teleconference and welcome all our participants in a teleconference today. And at this time, we'll take up House Bill 63 relating to the plumbing code. And I don't have a list of who's testifying from where, but at this time, I'd like to go to Anchorage and have the moderator there begin with the first witness. And I have two at this time testify in Anchorage, and after we take those two, then we'll go to Fairbanks.
Anchorage Teleconference, this is Carlin Juno.
This is David in Anchorage, and we now have three participants who would like to testify, and Mr. Ernie Duman is now about to speak.
Okay, how about if we take two and then we'll move on to another teleconference and then we'll come back for the third one.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Ernie Duman from the Do Alaska Company. We've been a manufacturer's representative in the state of Alaska since 1959. And we are currently manufacturer's representatives for Vanguard Polybutylene, which is a manufacturer of polybutylene pipe. We urge the committee to pass House Bill 63 with no amendments. And I would like to read some things in support of this should be noted primarily in the acceptance of plastic pipe area. I'd like to read into the minutes some testimony from the Alaska Mechanical Board of Examiners and Appeal, minutes of May 31, 1984.
Excuse me, Mr. Duman. If possible, would you try and, rather than read the entire text of the minutes, if that was your intention, and I'm not sure that it was, please try to keep it as concise as possible, and you were more than willing to accept the comments as much as possible in writing, although we have quite a bit already, so that in the interest of those others who wish to testify today, we'd be able to take testimony from as many people as wish to testify. Thank you.
I plan to only read those parts in that are pertaining to this issue.
Thank you.
The Do Alaska Company and Shell Chemical Company came to the municipality of Anchorage this last year and met with them several times, and our basic intent was to have polybutylene pipe approved in the local municipal code here. I would like to also point out that the municipality of Anchorage did a very good job of scrutinizing all the facts we presented, and we appreciate their interest in the thing. First part I'd like to read comes from testimony made by Mr. Ludwig, the deputy fire marshal for the city of Anchorage, and he comments on the approval of plastic pipe and the use of automatic sprinkler systems. And he goes on to mention that it has been National Fire Protection Association approved. And we read further on down in the minutes, and he states, if the board decides to permit an amendment, I would like for it to include the sprinkler systems and would be happy to assist the board in making an amendment to that. Since then, the city of Anchorage has approved a, I'm not sure if I'm going to use the right, I guess it's called a variance, and we now currently have being installed in the Anchorage Westport Hilton polybutylene in a ongoing project which will include 44 floors on that hotel. So I think that it's fairly clear that as far as the municipality fire people are concerned, that polybutylene is a viable, acceptable material. Further on down in the minutes, we read, a motion was made by Ray Carey that polybutylene pipe be accepted for type 5 construction under R1 and R3 buildings to make a code change to section 1004 of the Uniform Plumbing Code. This motion was seconded by Bob Bewley. Discussion. The vote was 4 in favor. I won't read the names. 2 against. The code change was granted. I would like to point out that the code change still must go to the Anchorage Assembly for their approval into law. However, generally, they have adopted the Mechanical Board's decision on these matters. I would like to also point out that polybutylene pipe as well as PVC conduit is currently approved and adopted by the state of Alaska in the 1984 National Electric Code. And I think that covered some questions on the electrical conduit. I would like to possibly reserve the right to come back and answer any questions on polybutylene that I feel comfortable in answering. But I think that's basically all the testimony I have at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Newman. Are there any questions by committee members? With that, then, I'd like to ask the moderator to have the next witness approach for his testimony.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Larry Beasley is about to speak. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Larry Beast. I've lived and worked in Alaska the last 15 years. Owned and operated an Alaskan Building Corporation the last 12 years. I represent and speak for the Alaska State Home Builders Association. There may be other Alaska State Home Builder members present around the state, so I may not be the only voice. The state HBA is an interested party to House Bill number 63, and we've monitored the efforts and the testimony of all parties most affected by this legislation. We supported a similar bill in the 13th legislature, and we support once again the committee's efforts to modernize the Alaskan State Plumbing Code. We see it as basically a movement to just keep pace with the 80s, and as such, we support House Bill 63 in its entirety without any amendment, because it adopts the 85 UPC, which clearly we think reflects the best thinking and total support of the International Association of Plumbing and Mechanical Officials, as well as the National Association of Home Builders Research Foundation, whose purpose is to demonstrate and monitor advanced design and construction for energy-conserving materials and techniques that could be feasible to mass market within this decade. There appears to be, based upon our polls, broad-based state support for this bill, with some controversy centering on the sections of the code which allows for polybutylene, PB, water pipes to be used for hot and cold water distribution. It's our understanding that committee members have been given the appropriate literature detailing the advantages of this material, its durability, independent testing laboratories project a 50-year lifespan. Its freeze-thaw qualities, that is, it freezes more slowly than metal pipe, and that it expands, its expansion limits exceed that of ice, so it resists cracking and breaking, and that it can be safely thawed through a method called aqua-thawing, which requires no patented equipment and can easily be undertaken by a contractor. And since open flames and or suppressed electrical currents cannot be used as they are with metal pipes, there is no risk to electrical shock or burning or home fires during thawing. And its scaling and corrosion qualities are so superior that it's virtually impossible to cause the pipes to be plugged by iron or lime deposits so common to all of Alaska. However, one of its most important qualities is the very issue we believe this committee should hear more about, and that's the cost-saving feature. The critics don't argue economics because there are no apparent arguments disputing its cost-effectiveness for the consumer. Consumers include all of us who buy homes, rent apartments, lease commercial office space, and pay hotel bills. The affordability of shelter continues to grow as a crisis issue facing all Americans, and it is our prediction that it will continue to grow more and more as young and old find themselves priced out of the so-called American dream of owning their own home. And it's fair to ask how much of an economic issue is the use of PV. In our professional opinion, we have estimated the direct cost reduction on a typically priced Alaskan home of $120,000 to be approximately $2,400. $2,400 represents the equivalent of about 40% of a 5% down payment. That same $2,400 represents a direct savings on interest payments of over $8,600 for a term loan of 30 years at 12%. This direct savings of $2,400 could easily triple to $7,200 if one considers the ripple effect of any reduction in sales price to all other sales price related costs such as origination fee, risk insurance, PMI, property tax, title insurance, etc. This $2,400 savings figure has been given our most careful analysis. It is only an estimate. It does represent 51% of the estimated typical waste and water portion of a plumbing bill on a $120,000 home. Now, cost comparisons are subject to many variables, but a study by the National Association of Home Builders Research Foundation in 1980 showed a 44% total installed cost savings compared to a copper plumbing system. We believe that when the state legislature is attempting to hold the line on state expenditures by, in some cases, cutting costs to the people of the state, it seems to be an appropriate time to pass a good, sound bill which allows the use of PV, a material approved by all major plumbing codes, approved by more than two-thirds of all major cities in the United States, as well as over 25 countries around the world. Because it should surely encourage the private sector to reduce its expenditures by giving the building industry a choice in how it chooses to plumb for hot and cold water distribution. And that concludes my comments.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bees, for your comments. Are there any questions by committee members? If not, I'd like to go to Fairbanks. I don't have a list of those people who are waiting to testify in Fairbanks. Representative Boucher?
Would you submit me the document that backs up the estimate of the reduction of cost in a $120,000 home, I think you said, of $2,400? I'd like to have, for the records, copies of the documents that allowed you to arrive at that conclusion.
Mr. Boucher, we'll send those down to DHL tomorrow.
Thank you. We would appreciate that. With that, I'd like to go to Fairbanks and ask the moderator to have the first person approach the microphone and testify.
This is the moderator, and the first person I have is E.R. Rutland. I have three others who would also like to testify.
My name is Gene Rutland. I'm the executive director of the Mechanical Contractors of Fairbanks Incorporated. The International Association of Plumbing and Mechanical Officials, I've worked in the mechanical business for 25 years, and they've always impressed me as a conservative organization, and they are one they're one of the last usually to adopt new materials. The I listened to the tape of the Monday teleconference and heard the testimony concerning the toxicity of plastics during a fire, and then read the bill referred to by Mr. Perkins, the Senate Bill 283, where plastic would be allowed in residential construction. A little difficult to follow the logic of that, but the mechanical contractors of Fairbanks don't particularly have any objection to the adoption of the 1985 Uniform Plumbing Code with the Senate Bill 238 amendments, but they're based mostly upon the feeling of our members that the in a commercial building, you ought to have a little different type of material other than plastic to do it in. Then the problem of the cost effectiveness as far as the homeowner goes, well, you should have, you know, it does save money for plastic.
Does that conclude your testimony, Mr. Rutland?
Yes.
Thank you. I do have a list now for Fairbanks. How about Richard Rutland?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
This is Richard Rutland. Mr. Chairman and members of committee, I had sat into the 18th teleconference and listened to the testimony, and I had not originally intended to say anything at that time. I was there to observe. But after hearing some of the testimony and the amendments offered, I felt that I had to speak out. I'm a master plumber in the city of Fairbanks. I'm a certified journeyman for the state of Alaska, a member of Local 367, the Anchorage Plumbers and Pipefitters Union, and a licensed specialty contractor for the state of Alaska. The safety of building occupants is the primary concern of those who write any building code and determine the products and systems used therein. Before you, you have House Bill number 63 recommending the adoption of the 1985 Plumbing Code. This code has been reviewed by plumbing, mechanical, and building officials and found after evaluating public and professional input to be acceptable. If during your consideration of this bill you find the testimony as given of Dwight Perkins in regards to fire-generated toxic fumes and smokes to be a valid problem with the use of plastics in structures in Alaska, then do not limit your protection to simply commercial structures or structures over 35 feet in stack height. Occupants of these buildings are most likely to be awake at the time of a fire or protected by a fire suppression or prevention system. Instead, protect those in the structures under 35 feet in stack height and in Class 5 non-rated residential structures. It is in these categories that our homes fall, where our families live, work, and or live, play, and sleep. If there is going to be a building in which we are only marginally safe, let's not make it our homes. If the claims for toxicity of the plastic group products are to be believed, then a complete ban on all of them, including many of the carpet, drapery, upholstery, and vinyl covering materials, would do more towards saving the lives of those we love than any other single act. Do not limit the use of plastics based on the recommendations of a labor protection lobby, which finds the use of plastics under 35 feet in stack height and in Class 5 non-rated residential structures, our homes, acceptable, but rather on the desire to protect those who are most vulnerable and most precious to us. The amendments offered do nothing to address this point. Since the vast majority of the homes in Alaska built after 1979 contain plastics in one form or another as an integral part of their construction and will continue to do so in the future, the matter becomes one of the safest total design. Properly designed and maintained plumbing, mechanical, and fire suppression systems can have a more beneficial effect on this problem than any single banning of a material. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rutland. Are there any questions? If not, I'd like to go then to Ketchikan.
This is June in Ketchikan, and our participants do not want to testify at this time.
Thank you. Then at this time, we'll go to Kodiak and take testimony from John Sullivan.
Yes, this is John Sullivan. I'm the billing official for the city of Kodiak. And I would simply like to state that we would urge the adoption of the 1985 code without amendments, and specifically without amendments, which would restrict the use of approved plastic piping beyond the restrictions imposed in the 85 code. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Is there anyone else in Kodiak who wished to testify on this bill?
Yes, I'm Bryce Gordon, a billing official for Kodiak Island Borough. And I'm opposed to any type of amendments to codes because it just makes it too darn cumbersome to enforce. That's all.
Does that conclude your testimony, Mr. Gordon?
That's it.
A man of few words.
Representative Kokanen?
In that case, wouldn't it be simpler not to have a code?
It might be, but we've got them, so we might as well do the up-to-date, the codes the way they're written, up because they're brought up to date. There's people that engineer these codes out, figure what goes in them, and they know quite a bit more than a bunch of us podunks in the, out here in the borough.
Thank you, Mr. Gordon.
You're instructing him. Kodaks
out there at the bottom.
With that, I'd like to go to Sitka and take testimony from Mary Lou DeLandre.
You sure you went?
Stand by, we're having a mic problem. Just a moment.
Yes, this is Mary Lou DeLandre. I am against that House Bill 63. I'm really against plastic. But the Senate Bill 238 is kind of a step in kind of curbing it to residential. But with the fire hazard, it really lays a lot of weight on the commission's shoulder over there to figure that one out. As for the cost, I cannot see that there's that much difference when you go to the back of the code book and find out how it has to be put in. Really, an engineer, mechanical engineer, would have to tell you that. But I really would go for adopting the Senate bill and against the House bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? If not, I'd like to go to Cordova, take testimony from Dave Dingle.
My name is Dave Dingle, and I'm the building official for the city of Cordova. And I would like to urge the legislature to adopt House Bill 63 without any amendments. The City Planning Commission, which also serves as the building board, has also reviewed House Bill 63, and they also urge its adoption. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dingle. At this time, then, I'd like to go back to Anchorage and take testimony from Robin Renner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Robin Renner. I'm the part owner of a small development company building now in the Eagle River area. I'm here to speak in favor of supporting of House Bill 63 and adoption of the 1985 Uniform Plumbing Code, also without amendment. In his transmittal letter to you, or to the legislature, Governor Sheffield indicated that the need for this legislation is to update what is an outdated code, namely the 1979 Uniform Plumbing Code. It's my understanding that this updating is recommended and done by experts who sit as a committee and whose thoughts and other reasonings go into any changes in the code. The failure to update the code results in not only not recognizing new developments in technology, but also causing confusion between different standards for applying various requirements under the code. I just want to mention briefly our own situation. We are building at the present time a three-story eightplex building in Eagle River. The inspector is required to apply the 1979 Uniform Plumbing Code, which limits plastic pipe to residential structures of two stories or less. Ours happens to be three stories, so they are indicating that we will have to go to, or at least under the 1979 code, we would have to go to cast iron or copper piping. The effect of that on us is to increase our costs by some $7,000 to $10,000, which is more than double the cost of the pipe system as it would be without the requirement to go to the cast iron pipe. This basically is for the drainage waste and wastewater system. That may not sound like much money, but it's about 3% of the cost of our building, and for small developers, that's a significant number. The Department of Labor, who is the inspecting agency on this, has a dilemma in that they have recognized and feel that the code should be updated, but actually there's not much they can do about it except enforce what's on the books. So as a result, we're caught in the middle, and although everybody recognizes that there's no safety or health factors involved here, we're put to this extra cost. I think that it's clear that adopting the 1985 code, therefore, would resolve some of these inconsistencies like we're experiencing, and we certainly urge that you adopt it and in furtherance of the uniformity of standards for materials, as well as for the reduced costs. I thank you and the committee for your time, and that concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Renner. Representative Boucher?
Would you ask him to send us those cost figures that he arrived at, the cost of more, the basis for that?
Mr. Renner, Representative Boucher has requested that you send us copies of the documents relating to the increased cost between the plastic and plastic pipe and the other material.
Yes, I'll be glad to do that.
Thank you. Representative Pierce?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want someone to explain to me, not necessarily Mr. Renter, but why in the proposed amendments, why are we saying that the plastic pipe may not be used underground? What? Why is that being added? There is also something that limits use to residential construction of not more than 35 feet, but it also goes through in every place that it talks about using any kind of pipe underground, changes the code saying you can't use plastic pipe underground. That's something that nobody's touched on unless I don't understand what it means.
I believe it was touched on a little bit during testimony when we had this bill up on Monday, but we'll take testimony from the other witnesses and
okay.
Then we'll have someone answer that. Thank you. Okay, still in Anchorage, I'd like to take testimony from Ron Watts.
Mr. Ron Watts, Anchorage Building Department. I'm going to pass at this point.
Okay, then we'll go to Matt Sue and take testimony from Les Hawkins.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'd like to speak on behalf of House Bill 63. I believe we should pass this with no amendments whatsoever. I'm interested in several fourplexes. I've currently built one that qualifies over 35 foot of stack height. And the extra cost to me on this, if we were to change this, which I don't plan to do, but if we were to change this, this would add $3,000 on our next construction to price that building. Over the term of the loan at 13%, that's $12,000 extra dollars. Why this building will have to pay for something that we feel is unnecessary. But I would just like to urge the legislature of the state of Alaska on behalf of the people in the best interest of the people to adopt House Bill 63 no amendments or exceptions. Starting, I think, the 1985 Uniform Plumbing Code allows for the state-of-the-art materials and plumbing practices to bring this state up to date with everybody else. That's all I have to say. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, could we get those, any price documents that you might have relating to the price?
Yes, I'll send those down. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I'd like to go to the teleconference site, Soldotna, and take testimony from Carter Cole.
He's approaching the mic at this time.
Mr. Chairman, committee, I'd like to address the 63 bill. I've heard that they've, you know, other countries and stuff adopted this thing, but if you guys need to check on one country, Canada, they've adopted that, a bill to use underground polybutylene and heating tubes. And what they found out, there's one molecule of air per foot that gets in there. You know, the polybutylene holds the water, but it doesn't hold anything else from coming in. And the four boiler manufacturers there won't even warranty their boilers using that system now. And it's, I'd also like to say something about the cost. I think if you put that, if you put the system in right, you're not going to save near the money what those people are saying they're going to save. You know, and the workmanship, I don't know if you've got, you know, if there's people that work with that stuff or not, but that plastic pipe, you cannot make it properly lined. You cannot, you know, you can't, you've got to use more hangers and stuff like that. You just don't get near the neat workmanship that you can out of a copper pipe. And let's see. I just don't, you know, and as far as for making it legal in any of the homes or anything, I just don't agree with any of it. I don't like the plastic pipe. I just soon have a ban at all. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Davis?
Yeah, Mr. Carter, just a question. You mentioned that it holds water, but other things. Could you clarify that? I didn't understand that exactly.
All right. What it does, it holds the water in. The polybutylene will hold the water in, but it does not hold other things from coming or entering the system. You know, it'll it keeps a watertight system from water leaking out, but it does not let the, you know, air and other stuff can go through the shell of the plastic. And when your air gets into your system, into a closed system, as like a boiler or something like that, that any air in that system will cause rust and your boiler will rust out.
Thank you.
Representative Boucher.
You made some reference to Canada. Would you just repeat on that again? And then are you quoting from a particular document, material, article, or was that just hearsay on that?
No, but I will have the information sent. You know, this is me and another one of the plumbers here. We checked on, he had a dealership with his solar roll. And it's just a different type of radiant heat. And from the manufacturers that he deals through Canada, they've, you know, discussed it there. And I don't have the literature in my hand, but if you guys need it, I'll send away and get it for you. And what was the other question?
I would appreciate you getting that information and sending it to the chairman, if you would, please, sir.
I most certainly will. Yeah, you had another question that you had needed now?
That was all.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. With that, I'd like to go to Fairbanks again and take testimony from Lee Disdain.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of your committee. My name is Lee Disdain. I reside at 2.9 Mile Chena Ridge Road, and I have somewhat of a unique distinction as having been a plumber for many more years than 15, and for the last 15 years, a professional firefighter with the city of Fairbanks. I recommend the adoption of House Bill number 63 as written without the proposed changes written into Senate Bill number 238 regarding the use of plastics. The other two codes that are addressed in your bill as well as in the Senate bill both allow, and there seems to have been no conjecture or discussion on the use of plastics in the in those other two codes, the Uniform Swimming Pool Code and the Solar Code. Also, as a licensed contractor with the state of Alaska, endeavoring to install plumbing and heating both inside the city of Fairbanks and outside the city of Fairbanks, I can see a serious dilemma cropping up when the state all of a sudden bans the use of plastics, and we have dozens and dozens, possibly hundreds and hundreds of homeowners installing their own installations. They have been using plastic for years. They will continue to use plastics for years with little or no way for anyone to stop them from doing this, even if the state was to institute a bill outlawing the use of plastics, be it ABS, polybutylene, PVC, or any of the others that may crop up in the future. It seems somewhat futile for the legislature to try to outguess the IATMO people who have spent many and many hours thinking about this code in preparation of building or putting it together and then proposing it in written form. But it does seem that there definitely is a move afoot by whoever, be it union or non-union people, to preclude the use of plastics. A similar situation, I've discussed this with my dad years ago, cropped up when copper came into effect. The union seemed to have a real hard problem accepting the use of copper. Well, now that's a standard that's established, and we move on 20 years or 25 years down the road, and from the time that was finally approved, we move into the realm and the age of the 80s, where plastic seems to be the thing that, apparently, in my own personal belief anyway, that the union seemed to have a problem accepting the fact that it may be a better way to take care of human excrement and other things that plastic is designed to take care of very nicely. And so I just would like to very strongly urge the passage of your bill number 63 and speak out against the deletion of the updating of the code. Oh, one other comment. The governor sent out a cover letter, and I'm not sure, I have both bills here, the Senate and the House version, and I'm not sure which bill he was writing, but in his cover letter he urged the updating of the code to bring it into the time, back into the day of today. And what this bill that the Senate's got before it, or I'm not sure that it's gotten before the Senate, but at least it's been proposed, it essentially does nothing but put us back to the 1979 code prior to any mention of the code in the code book, and I think that would be a gigantuous leap in the negative direction. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Despain. Representative Hanley?
Mr. Despain, I believe you mentioned that you're also a professional firefighter. Is that correct?
Yes, every third day of my life.
It sounds like a song. Do you consider the additional use of plastic or using more plastics than in the home building industry a threat, or does this magnify the threat to the life of the firefighter? How are firefighters looking on this increased use of plastic?
As a body, on the whole, the firefighting industry, I'll say, does not condone the use, the additional or increased installation of any kind of plastics into residential or commercial buildings. However, Mr. Rutland mentioned that with all the other plastics in the world, specifically carpets, all kinds of plastic furniture, and just the plastics that are found in the total fire loading of a building, the use of plastics in water piping and or drainage would constitute some increased life safety hazard, but whether or not it's, in my personal opinion, it doesn't warrant the banning of its use in residential construction for sure, or in commercial construction. The percentages of, I don't know how you want to measure either by weight or volume, but it's fairly inconsequential, the difference. If you take all the weighted or weigh or measure out the amount of plastics that are in buildings today, it's pretty inconsequential, the additional fire loading or fire safety hazard that will be discovered by the use of these plastics. I had the opportunity last winter to go into a building that partially burned down, and it was interesting to see that the plastic, when it burned out of the room that it was exposed in, when it burned back to the wall, the plastic sealed itself off just from the melting principle of the plastic, which you wouldn't have in the event that you had metal or any other type of piping that we use today.
Thank you very much.
Representative Kopanen.
Lee, it's good to hear you. Do you feel I turned it off, sorry. Lee, it's good to hear your testimony and have you come in. Do you feel that all plastics are equal? I've seen, you know, different reactions from different kinds of plastics, and just as in plumbing, we don't use lead pipe for water anymore. Perhaps we would perhaps distinguish between some of the plastics. I noticed AB or ABS risers that did carry fire from floor to floor in some of the buildings.
Yes, there. I don't want to become an expert on plastics by any stretch of the imagination. There is no question that some plastics are more toxic than others. And again, my comment there is, in looking at a building as a total entity, the additional toxicity potential with a building plumbed in plastic piping versus one that just has the normal amount of plastics in it, I personally believe that it is relatively inconsequential, the different life safety hazard of one to the other. Another comment is that we're dealing in areas where a lot of it is in code enforcement and a lot of it isn't in code enforcement, but you must realize that the vast majority of this piping we're discussing will be installed between two layers of sheetrock with a double plate on top or a single wooden plate on top and the same on the bottom, so it's encapsulated inside of a virtually fireproof area that lends itself to being tremendously protected from, you know, open flame where you don't have that in a room, just the room that I'm sitting in here in Fairbanks. If I look around, I see plastic on the foam rubber cushions that we're sitting on. The carpet that we're walking on is undoubtedly some synthetic, and I don't know about the pad underneath it, but I'm sure that there's hundreds and hundreds of pounds of plastics just in this one room, and there's no plastic piping in this building. But if you were to set this room on fire, the toxic level of the gases that we'd be expected to be breathing, I would think it would be very difficult to ascertain whether or not this building had plastic piping in it because of the terrible fire load in plastics that's in the building just from the normal human occupancy.
Yeah, right. But what I was interested in was the dry risers, you know, which go from floor to floor and do constitute a break. And I know that some plastics do close off, and others don't, and there is a distinction. I'm just wondering whether we should look into making a distinction.
Plastics are a viable, usable material in the piping world. And see, the thing about this also is that people that wouldn't want to use plastics, there's nothing to dictate. I mean, they haven't outlawed the use of copper. They haven't outlawed the use of cast iron. Part of this bill, the Senate version anyway, outlaws the use of plastic piping underground, which, again, to me, seems to be a labor situation versus the world rather than any other commonsensical thought about a fire hazard, because as you well know, that trying to burn a piece of plastic that might have a 4-inch cement slab and 6 or 8 inches of gravel between it and, you know, this 1,000-degree room that we're talking about, that's ludicrous. But again, it's all incorporated into this argument that plastic shouldn't be used in building construction.
Thanks, Lee.
Thank you much.
Representative Boucher.
Do you have a copy of the 1985 edition of the Uniform Plumbing Code in front of you, sir?
Well, I sort of do have. It's not mine. There's only two in the city of Fairbanks that I know of, but there does happen to be one right here.
Well, let me read from section 1004 and see if you agree with me on this. It says materials. Section A, water pipe and fittings shall be of brass, copper, cast iron, galvanized malleable iron, galvanized wrought iron, galvanized steel, lead, or other appropriate materials. Asbestos cement, CPVC, PB, PE, or PVC water pipe manufactured to recognized standards may be used for cold water distribution systems out of a building. Do you agree that asbestos cement in there is a good idea?
I would not care to address the asbestos cement as much as I would the lead piping.
We are addressing asbestos cement or asbestos products by the millions of dollars, and some of those problems exist in your community. So I would give thought that this is more than just a cost. or more than union versus a product. It's a responsibility. We are told right now that one feather or one flake of asbestos, you couldn't detect it for years. And in the process, we're going to spend millions of dollars, shut down schools, in the elusive chase of this stuff. So, you know, maybe just taking a look at this stuff and not arguing how much is going to kill a person, but maybe taking a look at what we do have in this code. Asbestos cement.
Yes, I'm not trying to defend the use of asbestos cement, but I also point out in that same section they advocate the use of lead-type piping.
Yeah, okay.
At this time, even just in the solder joints, there may be some question as to the amount of lead that's absorbed into the water that we're drinking.
Well, will we use asbestos cement in the joints as we put this stuff together?
No, are you referring to the plastic pipe?
Yeah, right.
No, absolutely not. It's strictly a solvent-type glue that... Now, again, I'm not sure if you're talking about the plastic problem or are you referring to the code that you read to me where the asbestos cement piping is legal?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, asbestos cement pipe. Yeah.
That I can't address. To my knowledge, it's not used at all in Alaska, and it probably hasn't been used for 30 years would be my guess, especially in Alaska. Now, I don't want to be quoted as an authority on this, but that's my opinion, that it's not used at all in Alaska. And just like lead piping for water, it hasn't been used in 30 years, but maybe somewhere in America it is, but it isn't in Fairbanks for sure, and to my knowledge, nowhere in Alaska.
I've run into some asbestos cement pipe in Alaska.
In water distribution?
Yep.
Well, you're older than I am, Red. There's not against you, but that's why I qualified my comment as more specifically within the industry for about the last 15 to 20 years.
I'm older than everybody.
I might have something to say about that, but we won't get into that right now. But again, I can't address the asbestos. All I wanted to address was the use of plastics, and that was I gave you my personal opinion on it, and I do hope that some consideration will be given to this, as well as it has been with, and IATMO definitely has given a fair amount of consideration to it at this time.
Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for Mr. Spain, particularly because you're a firefighter, and the film that we saw the other day was apparently supported by the fire department of, you know, of an area. And one of the things that you stated is that in terms of proportionate danger, there's no greater risk to firemen from PVC pipe than all the other plastics that are in the environment. Is that correct?
Yes, essentially that's true. And again, a comment about the tactics used in firefighting. I'm going to say all of your modern-day, well-trained fire departments use breathing apparatuses when they're doing anything relating to a structural fire, whether it's a house or a larger building. And that one of the big reasons is we have no idea what we're going to run across, and it's suicidal to go in and be the term in the old days was a smoke eater, run in and just breathe everything you can breathe, no matter what it had in it, and then 15 years from then you're dead
right.
Because of things that you were doing as a young smoke eater. Hopefully that mentality has died away. Believe me, in our department that's the case. I don't want to address the statistics involved in that, but today most of your fire departments use breathing apparatuses that protect them from the toxic environment that they find themselves. I mean, even wood smoke, as everybody knows, is nothing that you really want to breathe real deeply, and it's not considered that toxic, but for sure, the breathing apparatus has gone a long ways into protecting firemen from the environment that we find ourselves. And that's why I address the total plastic situation, as Mr. Rutland did in his comment, that it's almost ludicrous to pinpoint the plumbing, plastic plumbing piping in a building as being so terribly detrimental to the life safety in the building when people sleep on foam pillows and they sleep on foam mattresses and plastic sheets and everything else.
Thank you.
Representative Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lee, I've got a couple of questions. First of all, in Fairbanks, what kind of a code does the city have with regard to sprinkler systems? What sort of buildings have sprinkler systems, if any? And secondly, you were talking about the fact that I understand that most of the piping that we're talking about would be between
layers.
Is that
what you see in the asbestos?
Between layers of sheetrock and sealed off or under concrete or here, there, or everywhere.
Right.
And the fires that have caused cause the problems. Oftentimes people die in their sleep or die from inhalation. I know that a lot of that, the poisonous gases are spread through the ventilating systems and so on and so forth, but would this, I guess, can the smoke from the plastic piping burning between the sheetrock get out and into the ventilating system? So it's two questions.
Okay, the second one, addressing the, you know, the confinement of the piping, there's no question that it's possible for the smoke to get out of the sheetrock walls. But putting everything into context, again, the amount of smoke, I don't know how you want to quantify that, but the amount of smoke that is going to escape out of these sheetrock encasements is going to be so inconsequential to the amount of smoke that's going to be generated by the literally pounds and pounds of other superheated plastics that are in the room that is actually involved in the fire. It's, you know, I'm not a statistical expert on fires, but for instance, a tremendous amount of your plumbing, of course, originates in or around your bathroom, and that is a room of low incidence of fire starting in bathrooms. It's just a very small percentage, and it's, again, it's just putting this thing into perspective. We're singling out plumbing plastic piping as a real no-no, and we're not addressing the very lifestyles of people going to plastic everything. I mean, just the light, the lens covers over the lights that we're sitting in this room are all plastic. And, I mean, there's just, the plastic industry is everywhere. And we, here we are trying to point out that the plumbing in these buildings is such a terrible hazard to breathing when it catches on fire. I think it's been taken terribly out of context. And your other comment about is what type of buildings are sprinklered in the city of Fairbanks. There's two types of sprinkler buildings, essentially. You have a building that is sprinklered according to the pamphlet 13 code, which is for your commercial buildings, and then there's another code that's 13D, which is a residential sprinkler code. I had a discussion this morning, and I haven't given up on it, in an attempt to see where the city felt, or how the city felt regarding sprinkling of buildings. I won't bore you with that one. But at this time, there are very, very few residentially sprinkler buildings in the city of Fairbanks, and that's something on a different topic that hopefully the legislature will address someday, is giving homeowners a credit, some kind of an insurance break on residentially sprinkler buildings, but that's another topic at another time.
Representative Pierce.
If I could follow up, what about buildings that are over 35 feet in stack height, whatever that is, which presumably are mostly commercial buildings, are those sprinklered in Fairbanks?
A number of them are, and a number of them aren't. It's a matter of economics. There's more and more buildings are going to being sprinklered because of the economics of it. The insurance break they get will more than pay for the installation of the sprinkler system. It's just that somebody may need $50,000 to $100,000 initially to take advantage of this great savings.
Does a sprinkler system effectively help stop the spread of the poisonous gases?
I'd like to address it in another way. The sprinkler system usually extinguishes the fire before it gets hot enough to generate any amount of poison gases or any amount of heat or any amount of any type of damage other than water damage. That's the idea of the sprinkler system, is that you don't have to get a room up to 1,000 degrees before the sprinkler system goes off, because the heads, most of your residential heads are 165 degree heads, and as soon as room temperature gets to 165 degrees, it's just like standing in a shower trying to light a cigarette. It doesn't work.
Representative Copeland?
Yeah, this is, again, not off the plumbing code, but I'd like to get your the material developed on the sprinklers, because that is something we're looking at the other side, and trying to see whether we can do something about the insurance code to make it, as you say, more feasible. And different matter, but I think it's one of life safety and economic. So let's get that information, and we'll see whether we can get the Labor and Commerce to work on something they can agree on.
That'd be great. I sure appreciate it. Thanks, Nilo.
Thank you, Mr. Despain. With that still in Fairbanks, I'd like to take testimony from Art Robson. Hello, Art.
Good morning, or whatever it is down there. I guess it's afternoon. I speak, as you know, as a representative of Local 375 of the United Association, which means the Local Plumbers and Pipefitters Union. My remarks, for those who keep little checklists, are addressed basically in favor of the amendments introduced in the Senate bill, and that is because this represents a considerable compromise between two that come together for this sort of vent two portions. The compromise has already been put into effect in Anchorage. And, of course, it's easier to go along and have a uniform standard throughout the state, and therefore we felt that we should fall in line with this. Not that we're in love with plastic pipe, or if we had our druthers, would want any of it involved, but because this is a workable compromise between the competing interests. Today is probably one of the best days I could speak from my point of view. For those of you who listen to early morning radio, I go to work around 6 in the morning, and the big news this morning, of course, was the pipe and the 20 people who were hospitalized in New Jersey simply because of PVC pipe. It was a big splash for the day, and so it probably, I presume, some of you at least were up at that hour, and therefore you know how the day got started out. Whether these people are going to die or recover, I don't know. It wasn't on the noon news, so I can't tell you. But at least we can certainly say that we proved today that PVC pipe is damn dangerous to have near humans, firefighters or not. Now, basically the reason the debate over plastic commodities in the plumbing area anyhow is because they are cheap, quite cheap. In fact, when you compare them with other sources, other long-standing sources of plumbing materials, you'll find they're inexpensive enough that there's a very high margin of profit in them, which has resulted in the massive lobbying effort which you've undergone in Juneau, which YAPMO has undergone for several years when they were lobbying there. They throw great parties, but aside from the fact that they've got plenty of money and throw great parties, I don't know that their interests are the same as you as legislators should be or as mine are. First of all, you have people who are sales reps for the company. Second, you have some people who are more concerned with being able to get in as cheap as possible a plumbing system. These people are on one side. The others are consumer groups, firefighters, and unions who have to work with the plastic. So that you will have kind of a checklist of the various problems. Only a few of them have been discussed today. The problems with respect to PB or PVC, your plastic piping, relate to, number one, durability. It doesn't take anybody with any great brains to realize that they are not as durable when they're plastic as they are when they're iron. You get into thawability. We've had one witness who testified that there is a means of melting, thawing your plastic pipe in the Arctic regions, and this involves basically sticking a nozzle down the pipe and blowing hot water at the ice until you get it out of there. Can't be very hot. The common methods of thawing pipe, which are certainly the ones used here in the interior, particularly now that it's breakup and everybody's freezing up, are, of course, either clamping on metal and running it, clamping electricity onto the metal and running that through, or using steam. Neither of these, self-evidently, can work with plastic because it doesn't conduct the electricity, and the steam, of course, melts the plastic pipe. That leads you to the great reason for being opposed to plastic underground, out of doors, at least where you're as far north as Alaska, because you've just kind of lost the system if it freezes, because you cannot readily thaw it out. You can if you want to get something akin to a snake or an underground nozzle and get down in there, but the customary methods of thawing just flat don't work. The third thing that's wrong with plastic, of course, are the fire hazards, and we've discussed both aspects of that a little. Number one, that the plastic itself is combustible, and in most instances acts sort of like a wick or a fuse burning through the building. I think you saw the movie, which I believe is the same one that I've seen, which makes that point exceedingly well. The second is with respect to the gases released on combustion, and today's news made that for me, so I don't think I really have to amplify on that. I think everybody says that we need less plastic. The question is whether we want to, now that we have plastic in a number of things, add it to the internal inside of buildings so that there's one more plastic thing in there to knock off both the people who are inside and the firefighters. The fourth problem is one that is very prevalent in rural areas and hence in most of Alaska. We are inclined with our modern electrical conveniences to use the water pipes as an electrical ground. This can be okay if you go through the pipe with your wire that you would normally wrap around it when you have a plastic pipe, and if you've got an awful lot of minerals in your water, very hard water. But basically speaking, it does not work. And people all over are grounding, unfortunately, their electrical appliances on plastic pipe. And some days the electricity travels through the water because there's enough ions of various and sundry metals in it, and most days it doesn't. Fifth problem is permeability, and this is another problem with going underground or under sinks and homes, things like that.
plastic pipe is what's called permeable, which means if you were to go up to the fuel oil spill in Nome, something like that, if you run plastic pipe through that at all, the fuel seeps into the through the plastic pipe. It's the process of osmosis. You can do it, you know, in high school you do it with a hot dog skin, and that's the way it works. It also works, and I think your underwriters' labs have all said this, works with respect to using plastic pipe underneath the kitchen sink where you have all the little fancy cleaning chemicals. These work in very small concentrations into the water and hence into the people. And the final thing, the one that unions are mostly concerned about, is just simply worker safety. This stuff is put together with glue, which is kind of like airplane glue, if you want an analogy. Now, kids have been sniffing airplane glue for quite a while for kicks, and it also dissolves their brains. We've got laws against it, but why we can't have a law so the plumbers don't have to sniff the stuff as part of their work, I don't know. It's a problem for us, not because the guys leave work all happy and stuff like that, but because their brain goes after a while, and that creates a very substantial additional problem. When we discussed this in Fairbanks, we had one contractor come forward and indicate that he loved to work with the stuff because he liked to get a glow on without having to pay for the booze. Be that as it may, it is a real problem, and it's something that I think you folks have the duty to protect we citizens, we plumbers, and the firefighters also from. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Robson. Are there any questions? Representative Collins?
I have a question with regard to the worker safety. Don't under some of those circumstances people wear protective coverings over their nose and their mouths? I know that sometimes the electrical workers will do that. Is there some reason why plumbers can't do the same?
Plumbers are somewhat a different breed of animal for a start from electrical workers. Hypothetically, they could wear some sort of mask. However, a mask that will keep acetone and kindred solvents out of the air is probably pretty complex. Now, firefighters wear these. I think that employers would object because it would reduce your productivity to near zero. You know, it's like, sure, you can work at 50 below outside, but you're not going to get an awful lot done. And wearing all the tanks and the breathers and stuff like that is not going to turn people on. I know painters do it if they're painting the inside of tanks with plastic paints and things like that. Plumbers don't generally do this. They have enough problems when they have to weld peculiar metal combinations. And so it has not been the custom. It could be, certainly. We could create a safety industry for protecting plumbers from this, but at least until we have that, might be an idea not to do it in the first place.
Representative Collins?
The reason I ask that question is that the Alaska Department of Labor has recently hired a physician who's doing some epidemiological studies regarding some of the dangers out in the workforce, and that might be a problem that you could address with her, and I'm sure she could give you some good information as to how to overcome the problem and not reduce your productivity. Thank you.
Representative Pierce.
Mr. Robeson, do these same plumbers not wear some sort of eye protection when they're welding the same joints?
Anybody who welds without some kind of eye protection has got his marbles loose somewhere, I would suspect. I can't think of anybody who doesn't use either glasses or a hood when they're welding because you don't want to go blind. People are a lot more afraid of going blind than they are of inhaling something which will hurt them either down the road or give them a glow so that the day seems just like you're wandering around in the clouds.
I would think anyone who is smart enough to use the eye covering would also use a mouth or nose covering.
The particular substances are your acetones, your benzenes, and chloroform, and it's not that easy to get something that is going to filter these out. Primarily, it's what the firefighters use. You put tanks on your back, which slows you down, and you've got a good-sized mask on, and hence it doesn't make it very easy to look around and decide where to drill a hole to put a pipe and things like that.
Thank you, Mr. Robson. At this time, I'd like to go to Valdez and take testimony from Cecil Flemings.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Cecil Flemings. I'm the building official for the City of Valdez, and I would like to urge you to pass House Bill 63 with no amendments.
Representative Boucher?
You think that the 1984 code is evidently good. You've taken a good look at it, right?
That's the 1985 code, and yes, we are aware of regulations on septic, and we've also contacted our plumbers, our licensed plumbers here in Valdez, and they also agree, they do approve of the plastic pipe, and we feel that the committee should recommend House Bill 63 rather than Senate Bill 238.
Well, then you would approve the use of asbestos cement pressure pipe for water service and yard piping, right?
That's in the 79 code,
too. Well, I'm like the other gentleman, I'm not sure of his name now, that said he didn't think Alaska has any, and if it has, did have at one time, it's probably been 30 years ago.
I don't, well then, why would such an up-to-date organization approve this in 1982 and 85 if it hasn't been around for 30 years? If you look on page 101, in the back, it talks about how to put in asbestos, the use of asbestos cement pressure pipe for water service and yard piping. Yeah, 1979 also has it, so evidently that stuff's still around here. Now, how I make sure that I'm not approving some code that includes the use of asbestos cement pressure pipe when we're spending millions of dollars tearing down our schools to get asbestos out of there? Now, so, and my point being made here is sometimes we just pass these things on. I'm sure 5 years ago, asbestos was no big deal. But today we find it is. It's probably one of the biggest reasons in the budget why we can't supply our schools with some of the services and the other things that we need. I don't know how much we're going to spend, but I'm pretty sure it's somewhere in excess of $10 million to tear asbestos out of these schools. So we just can't be flippant about this. So I want to know if you would approve asbestos cement pressure pipe for use in construction in your city.
I would not like to comment on asbestos pipe at this time.
You're commenting on the code that you want passed. That's in the 1985 Uniform Plumbing Code.
I am commenting, I would like to comment on plastic pipe, and we do approve of plastic pipe in the city of Valdez.
No, this resolution is about passing the 1985 building Uniform Plumbing Code.
Representative Boucher,
isn't it?
That you are correct, okay. But he has stated that his reference is to the plastic pipe, and I understand your concern with the asbestos pipe cement, and I'm sure that he would also, and we will deal with that before we pass the bill.
Well, the reason I bring this whole asbestos pipe, because one of the amendments in that line that takes out these other exotic products also removes that asbestos pipe out of there as a material. I think we've got to really take a look at this thing.
Thank you, Representative Boucher. Thank you, Mr. Fleming. With that, I'd like to go back to Anchorage again. Ron Watts, did you wish to testify at this time?
We have local amendments, and those amendments were adopted after much discussion. Pros and cons. And I think there's pros and cons in the industry on both sides. We did approve the plastic pipe to be used in residential construction, and also the water service, drain waste bins, etc. It was not approved to be utilized in the commercial buildings. I think there probably is possibly a direction that will be coming up again and will possibly be under reconsideration. I might add one thing in reference to this asbestos pipe. You look at the codes and the way the codes are developed. Now, Mr. Boucher has asked that question several times, and what you normally find in the codes in reference to something like a material that's been around for years, and I know that material has been, and it is not widely used, if used at all, as has already been stated. And it gets into the code, and if it just kind of sits there dormant and nothing's happening with it and no controversy and no utilization and no use, then in many cases, unless someone comes along and takes it out, purposely puts in a request for a code change, then it just sits there and nothing happens to it. When we went through the amendments, we noted that, and we actually took it out, and that's the reason out of the Anchorage amendments, which I think the Senate bill is kind of patterned after, we took it out. That's all at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Watts. At this time, I'd like to go to Ketchikan again and ask Mr. Murdy or Mr. Bohannon if they'd like to testify.
This is Mr. Murdy. At this time, I'd just like to say that I'm in favor of House Bill 63. And with your permission, at this time, I think one of the things that I'd like to stress more than anything is the cost difference between ABS and cast iron to the average homeowner. The average piece of 100 feet of inch and a half ABS Seattle dock is $33.65 compared to $333 for cast iron. 3-inch ABS Seattle dock is $99.97 per 100 feet compared to $470 for cast iron. Our coupling for joining cast iron, a 4-inch coupling, is $2.29 compared to 81 cents for plastic. The difference in cost of building a home that might be 2.5 stories high is approximately somewhere in the neighborhood around $4,000. In talking with a local banker here in Ketchikan before this hearing, I was trying to get some information as to what it would do for affordable housing. And in talking with the bankers, they said that about 90% of them indirectly would be affected if everybody had to go to cast iron over two stories high. The difference in cost, some of them would not qualify for low housing. And that for this reason alone, I feel that in the times of the economy of the state, that it's imperative that we tackle this House Bill number 63. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Murdy. And if you would, please send us copies of material with reference to price of the different material.
I'll do that today, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Did Mr. Bohannon wish to testify at this time?
This is Mr. Bohannon. I'm just going to have to testify just a complete opposite of Mr. Murdy here. I'm not in favor of the House bill at all, and I maybe not supposed to refer to Senate Bill 238 before I'm concerned. That would be a better bill. Thank you.
Thank you. This time, I just have to say that we have a state affairs meeting that will be in here in 15 minutes, and so I'm only going to take testimony from one person here because he's been here before to testify, and I don't like to take time away from his business. Mr. Aiken?
My name is Vernon Aiken. I'm a mechanical engineer, design mechanical engineer. I have been for over 30 years. And part of the mechanical work is plumbing, of course. We need a plumbing code. We need an updated plumbing code. But this plumbing code, the 85, needs needs modifications, quite a few modifications. I'm in favor of the Senate bill that proposes these modifications. I'll first take waste piping, PVC and plastic waste piping. When plastic first came out about 15 years ago, I as a design consultant had to evaluate it as whether it was good or bad. And so I did a lot of research and checked out the advantages and disadvantages of it. It does have advantages in that it's lightweight, it's easy to install. It has disadvantages, which are fire and toxicity. Another thing is the expansion, the thermal expansion on it is a very bad policy, a very bad feature. Down here at the Breakwater Motel in Juneau, plastic pipe was put in. It was one of the first buildings in Juneau to put plastic pipe in. It lasted about 2 years. They tore it all out and put copper in. because of the thermal expansion. The pipe broke all to pieces. On the thermal stresses on it between the hot and cold would break it right off at the joints. You can look at your statistics, which are in the plumbing code. Steel expands at about 0.7 inches per 100 feet per 100 degrees. Copper, 1.08 inches per 100 feet per 100 degrees. PVC plastic pipe, 3.5 inches per 100 feet per 100 degrees. And if you go to PB, it's 10 inches. So you can see what problems you're going to have with plastic pipe. There are, if you look in your plumbing code, in the installation standards, in the back of the plumbing code, you will see that for plastic pipe, there are several pages of what you can do and what you can't do. I'll wager to say that there is not one job put in plastic that is put in according to plumbing standards. And this is why you're getting much cheaper cost out of it. They're not putting it in right. Let's take plastic pipe. You will have no restraints on it. You cannot store it for long periods of time in the sunlight. You have to have supports every 4 feet, whereas on copper and steel, it's 10 feet on the normal waste pipe. So it takes over 2.5 times the number of supports on it that it does on copper or steel. And again, the expansion is the problem. Now, going to PB or to your CPVC in wastewater, in addition to the toxicity problem or the controversy on toxicity, there is, again, the expansion. If you look on, say, page 128 on CPVC, and this also applies to your PB, you cannot drill a stud and put the plastic pipe through the hole in the stud. It says you must have a grommet on there. It has to be free so it can move. You cannot secure it to the wall, nail it to the wall like you can on a steel pipe for vent or for water piping. You can have it no closer than 6 feet to an attic opening. Why is that? Because danger of damage and heat. You cannot store it in sunlight exposure. You cannot have it near a gas vent. You cannot have it near a light fixture. You cannot have any kind of flame close to a plastic pipe. Here's another thing. Well, it says when you hook it up to a water heater, a submerged water heater, like you have a submerged water heater on a boiler, it says you will not use plastic water piping downstream from the boiler, from the heater, or 3 feet upstream or something like that. In other words, what good is it going to be to put PVC in if you're heating your water in your boiler? You can't use it. It's prohibited. And yet the people are not doing this. They're not following the standards. Here's another thing. On PB, there are two methods listed in the back of your code, two methods of joining it. One of them is heat fusion, and the other is insert fittings. It doesn't say anything about using glue to put it together. It's not listed in here. So therefore, you should use heat fusion or these two, or crimping, essentially, is what the insert fittings. Here's a restriction. On insert fittings, you have to have a special tube. This is on page 148, if you want to refer to it. This is for insert fittings. Tubes shall be calibrated 3 times daily when you use them on the insert fittings. Now, that is a little impractical if you have to calibrate the tool that you're crimping it with 3 times a day. So the point I'm putting across is no one's installing plastic pipe like it's supposed to be. They are cutting short on it. The best one is the offsets in plastic pipe. If you look on page, it gives you the offsets, what you can do. You cannot tee out. You cannot tee directly out of a main with PB. You have to put a loop or an offset or some other method of taking an expansion joint when you take off of a tee. Now, if you're taking a plumbing wall, there's no room to put an offset in the wall. the people are not doing that. They're coming straight out of a tee and right into a fixture. And this is not in accordance with the installation of manuals. This. All right. The code says that plastic pipe can be used in any building, non-combustible structure, a non-combustible construction.
Excuse me, Mr. Aiken, I don't wish to cut your testimony short, but we only have at max a couple more minutes.
Okay, I'll
State Affairs Chairman is going to be extremely upset with me.
All right. It says you can use it in non-combustible. Nowadays, on a Type 5 non-rated building, I beg your pardon. Nowadays, on non-combustible construction, they're using that in schools and in large buildings, which means that you can essentially use plastic pipe in most any building that's built of wood. We have schools, one out in the valley that's all wood. It means you can use plastic hot cold water, CPVC on it, or PB. I don't think this is right. Plastic pipe. PB, by the way, is made by only Shell Oil Company. This is why they push it. There's no other company that makes it outside of it in Japan. So they have a monopoly on PB, which was in the code a couple of years. Only used PB in the 82. In the 85, they've added CPVC on there. So I'm in agreement with the person testified from Sitka. As far as I'm concerned, they should not allow plastic pipe in a building. And I've come to that conclusion over years of experience and years of analyzing. I know it's allowed in residential, and it probably will continue to be, but I think it should be kept out of commercial buildings because they are public buildings, and the public safety is at stake. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Aiken. Are there any questions? Representative Collins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Aiken, are you aware of whether any plastic piping was used up on the North Slope to put in Prudhoe Bay?
Those were modular units, I believe. I'm not too familiar with it, but they were probably modular units, and I would say that they probably is plastic pipe in there.
And to your knowledge, have they had any problems with that plastic pipe there?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with happenings on the North Slope.
Actually, the problem they had was with the metal piping.
In for what? For waste vent or for hot and cold water?
For transmission, some of the liquids and fluids that are passed on. I don't know exactly what they are, but I do know that I've been speaking with the geotechnical engineer who did all of the groundwork for the Prudhoe Bay construction, and in fact, they did find that superior to the metal piping for those purposes.
This is true. One advantage of plastic, it's inert. It will take solutions and acid that metal, steel, or copper pipe will not take. That's one of its advantages. Right.
Are there any other questions? If not, I'd like to thank all the participants today, both in Juneau and on the teleconference network. And we'll sign off teleconference network and adjourn the meeting. The time is 3:00. I just wanted to mention that we'll hold this bill over until tomorrow, and also House Bill 278, we'll hold it over until Monday.